Mike Johnson in studio. Johnny putting in. How many different shows are you on today?
I'm touching all the bases.
Yeah.
I'm at Leafs Lunch, you guys, then That's Hockey a little bit later. And
okay.
Car Wash.
Yeah, maybe a Sports Center in there as well. Why not?
You're here. There's a That's lot right. going on, right? So we're going to get to the Yzerman stuff, the Melnick video. We're going to do our Maple Leaf organizational draft here in a moment, which you're going to be a part of. But I want to play a clip, and I want you to explain what happened on your show earlier today, because you were co-hosting on Leafs Lunch.
Okay.
Something went down when Pierre LeBrun
Oh, my
was on
goodness.
The phone.
Yes.
All right. Can we play the audio?
Please.
Let's hear it, and let's all go around the table and try to figure out what the hell was going on here with Pierre.
Every pay period, that pool is accumulated. The players almost always go 50%, so the owners draw out of that escrow pool. What is that?
Are you drilling something? Are you doing some renovations?
My chair needs oil.
Is it ever?
Are you play drilling that again. Something?
Should we play it
play
one
it
more
from
time?
The beginning.
One more time. All right, play it again.
It stunned
Every
me.
Pay period, that pool is accumulated. The players almost always go 50%, so the owners draw out of that escrow pool. What is that?
Are you drilling something? Are you doing renovations?
My chair needs oil.
Finally, Gord's like, what's going on here? Because the first one, he almost did the nailer with Deshaun Burke. Like he fought
I'm
through
sorry,
the question.
Like from the top again, and I'm going to make an assessment.
Every pay period, that pool is accumulated. The players almost always go 50%, so the owners draw out of that escrow pool.
What's your call? Is that a chair moving?
That's something moving.
That
something.
Is beans and wieners for lunch. And you are blowing a hole through your chair. That's what's wrong with this chair. You need to refurbish the material on the chair.
That sounds like it was a mute malfunction. Yeah, like that was supposed to be on mute.
Yeah, like he actually was. He thought he was pressing mute. And he pressed volume up.
If he would have darkened his office, dead. He would have blown himself out of the house. He would have shot off his chair like a rocket if he lit a dart in his office. That's the only thing that went down there.
Yeah.
Wow, man.
Wile E. Coyote.
I heard that.
Himself up.
I couldn't. And the visual, because it was on TV, like all of your faces were like, what the hell's going on here?
Like, do we have just a noise? Because I know what moving a chair sounds like.
Accumulated.
No. That is a boiler that's unsettled, and you're in trouble.
I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt.
The first one, first one, you could be a chair. The second one, boy.
Does the second one sound different, Mals?
Are you drilling something? Are you doing some renovations?
My chair.
Cool. What is that?
Are you drilling something?
I love that Gord goes, what is that?
What is that?
At least.
Man.
If you farted, you doubled down at least.
I think it was a chair. I'm willing to give my guy the benefit of the doubt.
It's almost too obvious. It had to be the chair.
Yeah.
It's too much.
The biggest mute malfunction in the history of iPhones.
Sure. Somebody slipped a whoopee cushion under there.
Something went down on the lunch.
Light a dart and you got a human rocket. Blow right through the roof of your house.
Should we play it one more time?
Yeah, for sure.
Every pay period, that pool is accumulated. The players almost always go 50%, so the owners draw out of that escrow pool. What is that?
Are you drilling something?
Oh, that was great.
Yes.
Oh, so good.
He's drilling a hole right through the fabric of his couch. What he's drilling.
He had to know that was going to come back.
Oh, it had to, man.
Oh, boy.
This isn't his first rodeo. He knows what's up.
I mean, we have to put together a medley of sound bites that we've had over the last 3 or 4 years. That's going to be in there.
I think that might top Sean Burke. Like, we have the Sean Burke flush. Do you want to hear
Let's
that,
hear
too?
The flush.
Of course, you are the goaltender coach, and this part of the world, we are interested in him because he's an Olympian going as the number three goaltender.
Naylor laughing.
I've never heard that before.
You haven't heard
I've never heard that one.
He's interviewing Sean Burke, and Sean Burke apparently he explained it to us.
He
right?
did.
He said he didn't want to be around the coaches. He was in the coaches' room, so he went into the bathroom and he walked by one of the sensors of the urinals.
Okay,
and it
which is a reasonable explanation.
It is reasonable, but we called him out on it that he thought he was taking abuse.
And listen, he explained it. Well, maybe to be fair to Pierre, we should shoot him an email again. Although he did explain it on the show. He said it's the chair. He's moving the chair around.
That's not a chair noise.
I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Well, get some felt on the bottom of your chair.
Yeah,
exactly. WD-40, that thing.
Whatever.
Something, man. Or send that thing out to the curb because it can't happen anymore.
That's a sloppy Joe and a poutine for lunch.
Or he's had a late night the night before.
Well, he's a Cowboys fan. He was disappointed with the way his team played.
You never know.
Never know.
That's the 3 a.m. wheel coming out.
all right. So we'll get to the Eisman stuff. We're going to get to the Eugene Melnyk, Wayne's World, Mark Borowiecki interview, whatever it was, a little bit later on. But every year, you brought this to our attention the other day. We do the organizational draft. So in the past couple of years, we've done the Maple Leaf organizational draft based on importance to the organization. This year, we're going to put a bit of a different spin on it. First and foremost, we got Johnny in studio. We've only done this with the three of us. We got a four-man panel going on here. So we're going to do two rounds, but it's going to be based on who has the most pressure on them going into the season. Okay, so it can be management, coaching staff, or players. This coincides with Bo Doug coming out today and the new odds. They got the Maple Leafs as the cup favorites. Simmons wrote a piece in the Sun about high expectations, uncharted territory for this team. And we drew names out of a hat to kick off the show. Mike Johnson got the first pick. So we're going to do two rounds. It goes Johnny, then O, then Noodles, then me, and then we'll snake back. So I'll have two picks and so on and so forth. So, Johnny, you are on the clock in the Maple Leafs organizational pool based on pressure going into the season.
Well, first off, I'd like to thank and say hello to my fans at the Boston Pizza draft party.
There you go.
Watching
Pierre LeBrun.
My basement. Pierre LeBrun. You know what? I'm going to say the guy with the most pressure is Mike Babcock, the coach, because I think for so many of the players, I feel pretty comfortable with what they can do, and they don't have to do that much more. But if you talk about a team that at times struggled on their own end, goals against wasn't as good as they wanted to be, they leaned on their goalie too much. If he's the best coach in the world, that's the part of the game that you can fix as a coach. You can't teach people how to score. Jeff O'Neill knows how to score. I don't. You can't make me a goal scorer. But you can teach defense, and you can teach system, and you can teach buy-in. He's got to do a better job of that. And when was the last time he won a first-round playoff series?
Long time.
He's like one for his last nine. If he's the best coach in the world, it's not just the Olympic team. He's got to get through a round of playoffs. So I think Mike Babcock, most pressure.
All right.
At number two, I'm going to go with John Tavares. And it seems fairly simple to say he just has to do what he did in the island all those years and do it in Toronto. But he's one of those guys that stuck his neck out and said, I want to go back home. I want to be in this market. I want to be in a traditional hockey market. He did it. He's got a big ticket. And it's very simple. All eyes are going to be on him. I've said it in the past. I don't think that talking to the media or being afraid of somebody writing an article about your play is that big a deal, because at the end of the day, you play hockey, you go home, you put that stuff aside. But all eyes are going to be on him.
Yeah, it's fair. I'm going to slide off of Johnny's point because I think it's Frederick. I'm going to go a two-pack. So I'm going to go off the...
At number three,
I'm going to go with a two-pack, so I'm going to go off the board a little bit. But it's going to be a combo. Frederik Andersen / Steve Briere, the goaltender coach.
Okay.
And here's my reasoning. Johnny just said, Frederik Andersen in the last couple of years has been one of the most taxed goaltenders in the National Hockey League. And he's arguably been the Leafs' MVP the last couple of years. You know, a couple rough starts, and you know, you can throw in Matthews and throw in everyone else, but he's been that great. In order for the Leafs to have success and go deep into the playoffs, they need the goaltending at the right time. Freddie had a poor game seven. Everyone looks at Gardner, but Freddie wasn't what he
Two
could
awful
have been.
Goals in the third.
Wasn't
awful.
Good enough. Wasn't good enough. But I believe he's pushed through to being on the cusp, if not an elite goaltender.
Mm-hmm.
He's right there. So why I brought up Steve Briere is if you're going to manage his minutes and make sure that he's fresh and ready for a long playoff run, it comes to choosing the right backup goaltender and managing their minutes and getting them ready to give good quality starts on the back. So whether it's Garrett Sparks or McElhinney, they got to make sure that they get quality minutes from somebody not Frederik Andersen. You got it from McElhinney last year, and Briere was a big part of that. He's an outstanding goaltender coach. Now, if it's going to be Sparks, you got to make sure that there's not a drop-off.
Do you think either of those guys, if not both, would be claimed on waivers? McElhinney and or Sparks?
I don't think Sparks. There would be a... Personally, I think McElhinney, if I was Tampa, I would look at McElhinney because I think Louis Domingue is... I'm not a Louis Domingue fan, personally. I think there's a couple marketplaces that would look at a veteran guy like McElhinney. Relationship is a big part of it. I know Sparks won the AHL Goaltender of the Year last year, but Troy Grosselneck won it the year before. You know, it's...
Who that?
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, right. Who is just that saying, guy? I'm just saying, five out of the last 10 AHL Goalie of the Years played in the NHL, five didn't.
Right.
I think Sparks is going to get an opportunity. He's got to seize it.
Okay, so you got Freddie Anderson / Steve Briere, the goaltender coach at three. I got a two-pack of picks here. Couple guys I'm surprised they're on the board. I'm going to go with Austin Matthews at four because he's coming off a playoff series and the first time in his career in Toronto where he actually was getting criticized by everybody across the board. There was nothing to promote that was positive from his seven-game series against Boston. You've got the friction that some people believe could be there with him in Babcock. You've got the fact that even though Tavares is here, he's here to shield Matthews. So he's got to stay healthy. He's got to perform. I think he's still the face of the organization. If he doesn't have the contract signed between now and opening night, he's going into his first contractual season. You know, the year before he's going to hit pay dirt, you would expect. And he might be the captain, you know, at some point. I don't think it's going to happen early in the season. Dubas said that, but I still think more eyes will be on him in terms of how he continues to mature and continues to grow. So the face of the franchise, a team that's expected to compete for a cup, that guy's got pressure on him. My second pick, the first pick of the second round, is Kyle Dubas. And for a number of reasons, he's going to be dealing with his first trade deadline where we expect they're going to be competitive. The past couple of years...
He can hit rewind way before that.
Well...
Right now.
Well, no kidding. Yeah. Like, he's got to get things done here with contracts, and I was going to get to that in a moment, but ultimately that's what it comes down to. What's he going to do with Nylander? Eventually he's got to get to Matthews. Eventually he's got to get to Marner. Might have to get to Jake Gardner. You know, everyone's got a take on Gardner, but he's a UFA at the end of the year.
Yep.
How's he going to work with Babcock? You know, I don't know what that relationship's going to be like. I don't think we'll be privy to it, but you never know. And the deadline, if they are truly a cup competitive team at that point, we all know the position of need. Past 2 years, they've went out and got a fourth-line center in Plekanec and a fourth-line center in Brian Boyle. Can you find the Michael Kempney of this year?
I was just going to say, it doesn't necessarily have to be that home run where it's that Shattenkirk or a guy like that. It's the guy that fills the void and does the job.
Absolutely. So I got Matthews with the fourth pick, Dubas, fifth pick, first pick of the second round. Noodles, you are now back on the clock.
I'm going to go with Nazem Kadri because he's had back-to-back 30-goal seasons. He's played a prominent role in a lot of different situations. And the signing of John Tavares has, on paper, taken away some of that role. Now, we don't know where he's going to be slotted. We know where he's going to be slotted, but we don't know the type of minutes he's going to be playing and where. If Babcock's going to use him predominantly in the shutdown situation, penalty kill, that is going to hurt his stats. That is going to hurt his overall play. Now, you've said this too, Brian. He's come out and said the right things. He's a good teammate, all that. Got a long-term contract, but
he's a competitive guy.
He's a competitive guy, and you don't want him... I don't see him ever being a distraction, but
you got to show him the love. He wants
driving away from the rink some nights. He's probably going to be a little bit frustrated, even though they win 5-2, and he's played 14 minutes and hasn't had a sniff on the score sheet.
I guess in some ways he gets a pass, though, like less pressure because he's got the long-term contract, so financially it's not really about this. And he's shown he can score when he's given the opportunity, so if he doesn't quite produce the same level... But it's an easy excuse. Like, it's easy to explain it away.
They gotta find some ice for him, Johnny. I mean, they can spot him at left wing sometimes.
Yeah, he'll get power play time.
4-on-4 situations. They'll find some ice for him.
Make a great point. It's just I think the pressure comes from putting the brave face on for the next 8 months.
Yeah. Well, and let's be honest.
And the next 4 years.
Well, exactly.
I mean, if this is the precursor to the next half decade of his hockey life, then...
And what do they keep saying? Up the middle of the ice, they don't stop at the second line center. Like, when people are like, look at how this team's built, they don't just say Matthews, Tavares. They say Matthews, Tavares, Kadri.
As they should.
Like, he's got to play a role. He can't take a step back and be like, all right, 15 goals is good enough because these
And maybe part of his role is he's got to take... Kapanen and bring him along and Connor, like, help drive those guys to be better offensive players and not just energy guys.
I think his responsibility will be a lot different, and that starts with him mentally embracing that And that's a tough thing to do when you've had success in certain situations the last 2 years.
Oh, back on the clock.
I'm going to go with Jake Gardiner. His last game was possibly his worst one as a Toronto Maple Leaf. He was minus five. And this town, they seem to want to not forget things. So, you know, fair or unfair, he's got to go out and kind of just reprove himself. And as the organization, they have to figure out going forward if they're going to be a contending championship team. If he's going to be on the ice for 25 minutes a night, he's got to be more responsible and more of a leader and more of a complete player, a competitor. And he's just got to kind of reset and move along from that, because if it starts off ugly, we've seen in this town how things can get really ugly. So he's under the gun right off the hop.
And playing for money. UFA and...
Mm-hmm. All of it.
Yeah.
Johnny, last pick.
I'm going to say Mitch Marner, because I don't think he's going to get signed before the season starts. I think he'll be playing for a contract. I think he believes that he can put up 85 points and command $9 million. And there's some pressure to that. Also, I do believe that the assumption would be that Tavares would play with Marner and that it would work.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's very much slotted in, likely Hyman, Tavares, and Marner. And while it looks good on paper and there's no reason why to think it wouldn't work, still has to. So, you know, he's got lots to play for. And he's the kind of guy, I think, who doesn't mind that pressure. Like, he's willing to bet on himself.
And if you remember his start last year, it was miserable. Miserable. And he had
1-21 or something.
Yeah. He had a turnaround.
And it's a good point about the connection with Tavares, because Tavares isn't going to be the one that moves down the lineup if it doesn't work.
Right.
Like, if Nylander stays with Matthews and they don't move that, and Babcock decides, you know what, Tavares, Marner isn't working, it's not Tavares that's going down to the third line. It's Marner that's going down. So you're right about that. There you have it. Two rounds, eight total picks. Our annual Maple Leafs organizational draft. This year the spin was who has the most pressure on them going into this season. And it went Babcock 1, Tavares 2, Freddie Anderson / the goalie coach Steve Briere 3, Matthews 4, Dubas 5, Kadri 6, Gardner 7, Marner 8. Is there a ninth that's like the most obvious pick? Is it Nylander? Yes. Is it
the
Riley?
Wingers for the Toronto Maple Leafs. You've seen in Pittsburgh where they have the high talent down the middle. There's got to be a Connor Sheary that steps up and scores 25 or 30 goals.
That's a Rust. Andreas Johnson, Kapanen, some of them. Brown.
You can't pay everybody. Everyone can't be a high-priced talent in every position. So someone's got to step up and define themselves as a guy that can get the job done.
I'll throw another one on there. Zaitsev. He had a bad season last year.
That contract is heavy.
I mean, it's not as rich as people think. It's $4 million, isn't it?
Mm. But
it's
4-5.
Yeah. But if you're going to play top 4 minutes, you better play like a top four. And that D, at some point, Ron Hainsey is going to look, you know,
his age.
Yeah.
And well, especially if he kills every second of every penalty.
Yeah.
And that, you know, the defensive core on paper at best is an average group. So I love Morgan Riley. I think more of Jake Gardner than people recently, but after that, you want Dermott.
That's why I look at Dermott as a guy who's got pressure. Guy who, for this team to be good, I think he's got to be good. He can't regress and have the sophomore, I'm in the NHL.
Yeah,
I'm okay with it. Like, he's got to push up and start taking time away from Hainsey and sliding up.
The right side seems weak.
Yeah.
On the defensive. Now, if Dermott can play his offside,
maybe get offside occasionally.
Yeah,
that's what I wonder. If by the end of the year, Dermott's up with Riley and
on occasion,
he was back.
It wouldn't situational. Be the worst thing in the world. And Dubas has said he's bullish on his D, and he wants to. I think Hull's going to get a look. I think, you know,
they got that Ochoganov kid.
Yeah, there's some guys that are going to push for it, but ultimately Zaitsev is a guy who needs a bounce back year.
What did you make of Steve Yzerman deciding to step down in Tampa? No longer the GM. He's going to be an advisor for the year.
Well, I think for a couple things stood out. One, it's a reminder of how hard it is to be a GM. Like, just how taxing that job is. It seems fun in the suit, on the charter, wheeling and dealing, but it's a grind. If you want to do it well, it's a grind.
Mm-hmm.
First thought was, why? Like, that team is on the cusp. You put that team together to be great for 4 or 5 years. Now is when you can kind of like watch the fruits of your labor come through, and he's not going to do it. Why would that be? One, because he wants to get back to his family. I didn't put the Detroit factor right away. I didn't know that he was going back to live in Detroit. But also, they want to lock in Brisebois, who they've worked together well. Continuity for the next 5, 6, whatever long Brisebois is there. And an eye to the future, make sure they don't lose Brisebois if something else comes available.
So I didn't put it together
like that he put up that he's angling maybe Ken Holland to Seattle, Yzerman to Detroit, mm-hmm. you know, as the dominoes fall. But it would not. Listen, that guy is sharp, Steve Yzerman. I mean, there's not been a lot of situations he's miscalculated. So it wouldn't surprise me if he thought that far in advance.
He's done a great job, man. A great job in Tampa. So
and he only has one more year. That's the other part I didn't know. I always assume GMs always have a three, four, whatever, right. something. He only has one more year on his contract.
Mm-hmm. So he's had this date in mind. It's just the timing of it caught everybody off guard. 3 days before camp opens.
Yep.
How about that Wayne's World routine out of Ottawa last night with Eugene Melnyk and Mark Borowiecki?
Never seen anything like it.
Oh, what would you have done, Carolina, your prominent player in that organization, if they came up and said, can you do this with the coach?
No, with the owner.
Peter Karamanos. Sorry, the owner.
I would say, I'm not doing it. I'm not in TV. This is not my job.
Yeah.
Put
Borowiecki in a possible
position. I think John Forslund to do it.
I think he did it.
As well as he possibly could.
As best as he could. Like, he's not a guy, too. Like, if Johnny and I call those games. Like, Boro is a great person to sit and BS with in the dressing room. Like, he'll talk to you all the time. Even on the ice, sometimes it comes off. He'll lean over and take a peek at the monitor. Like, he's the type of guy that you really pull for. Because he's a glue guy. He's a team guy. But I didn't put the connection as to why he was the chosen one.
He's
the
Ottawa guy. I think for that very reason, he's got the cachet in the community and on the team to not be beat to shreds about doing. Like, if I would have done that on one of my teams, I would take so much heat from everyone, from every possible angle. It'd be overwhelming.
That would be my concern.
But it won't happen to him because I think he has that much respect.
He's the type of guy who, I don't know, maybe once out of every four or five games, like, he'll go hard into the boards or get a slap shot in the leg where you're like, yeah, his leg's broken. He's done for the year. And he goes and gets looked at and is back out on the ice. Like, he's just one of those guys who you pull for. But I was telling Brian, I respect the fact that Ottawa's trying to mend some fences.
Yeah. Communication
the message
is good.
In that, I thought it was great, but I just...
The way it was presented was strange.
That's the different thing. Having Boro there,
Melnyk is trying to get a message out. He's trying to there were a couple things you could tell he was trying to hammer home that they're excited, whatever the hell that means. Everyone's excited. They're rebuilding, which I'll give him credit for saying that on the record. A lot of owners are,
as they should,
immune to that word, and they're running from it. And Melnyk in this video was trying to convince people that he's committed to the market and the team's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Now, whether I'm not convinced I believe that, but he has an obligation, I think, as the owner of a team that isn't selling a lot of tickets.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows about the arena problems. They're more than likely not going to be a great team. I mean, everything's going against them from a PR standpoint. A lot of it's self-inflicted, but I'll give him credit. The way it played out was strange and unique and awkward, but he was trying to get a message out.
Yeah.
And if you're a fan, I think you can appreciate that.
Would there have been a better way, though? Would there have been a better... Like a town hall where you can not have as scripted questions and have more answers that are organic as opposed to...
Honestly, we're talking about it. Like, they maybe have... Like, I'm looking at it. It's got 340,000 views.
But how much of it is mocking views?
Yeah. Probably.
That's the thing. How much of it is, watch this train wreck of a video.
Yeah, if you go to the comments underneath, it says everything you need to know about
what people thought. Yeah, there's 1,300 comments where people are like, you know, the Jordan meme and the guy with the eyes and, you know, the stop sign.
That guy with the eyes, that look like Chris Pronger.
It does look
Every time Pronger. I see the guy with the old...
Yeah.
Wow. That guy, I think he looks exactly like Chris Pronger.
The blinking guy?
Yeah, he does.
The blinking
guy. Yeah.
He does. It's just some regular guy.
I see. Like, he's not. For a good year, I thought it was Chris Pronger because so many hockey people put it out there.
Yeah. Right.
And he's a funny cat, so they could do some of that, but obviously not.
It is. But you're right. But I'm reading it right now. The Ottawa Senators are proud to share their vision for the future of our team.
And the other part of it, though, has slipped in. 10 new players this year, 15 by next year.
I know. That was...
You start doing the backtracking math. If you're a veteran on that team, you know by next year there's only 8 of us?
That's what they're saying.
Well, what are you going to do with me?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, Boro's
so are we going to have... How many returning? Am I one of those, right?
That was a part of
it. As a veteran guy? That's what it runs through my mind.
But what's the point of having training camp, though, if they've already determined who's on the team?
So like, giving 10 spots away.
Yeah. They should have taken calls, and it's like Pierre Dorion with a fake accent calling in. Guy Boucher. Yeah. You know, this is Ted from Ottawa. I'm a big fan of the show.
That would have been
first
great
time, long time.
If they took calls.
That would have been outstanding. But they're all planted calls.
Yeah. You think of your coach.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Johnny, we'll catch you everywhere the rest of the evening.
I'm here to work.
There's Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst.